DCT Audio. The art of good listening.
The RNLI is a charity that saves lives at sea. Powered primarily by kind donations, this search and rescue service have been saving lives for 200 years. It is a charity founded upon and driven by values of selflessness, courage, dependability and trustworthiness, with volunteers at its heart. Values shared by generations of supporters, perhaps supporters like you who are listening to this podcast, who have powered its life-saving work through your kindness and generosity for 200 years. Many of the RNLI people are volunteers, ordinary people doing extraordinary things, supported by expert staff, all working together to help communities at home and abroad save lives. Across the UK and Ireland, a fleet of over 400 lifeboats are waiting for the call to rescue. Powered by brave volunteers and your support, these lifeboats have saved countless lives across the years. From large all-weather lifeboats to smaller inshore vessels, each has been designed and refined to be highly capable rescue craft. It all began nearly 300 years ago when a London coach builder, Lionel Lukin, paved the way for the first purpose-built lifeboat when he designed the world's first unsinkable boat and patented it on the 2nd of November 1785. Although a coach builder, Lukin was interested in improving the safety of the boats, and in 1784 he began experimenting with a Norwegian yawl, a type of sailing boat, using the River Thames to test his unimaginable design. Lukin incorporated pockets of air in watertight bulkheads, buoyant gunwales, and used cork and other lightweight materials in the structure. He also used a false iron keel for additional weight to keep the boat upright. And so it was, in 1824, that a vision for a service dedicated to saving lives became a reality in Bishopsgate's trendy City of London Tavern on the 4th of March, 1824. Living in Douglas, on the Isle of Man, Hilary saw the treacherous nature of the sea firsthand. He witnessed dozens of shipwrecks around the Manx coast and saved many lives with the help of locals. After some initial difficulties, King George VI graciously granted the royal prefix to the institution's name, making it the Royal National Institution for the Preservation of Life from Shipwreck. On the 5th of October 1854, the institution's name was changed to the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, as they are known today. In its 200th anniversary, I visited the RNLI lifeboat station at Blackpool and spoke with some of the volunteers who give up their time and for some are willing to risk their lives to save others.
I'm Wim Williams, resident in Blackpool and volunteer at the RNLI.
Wim, I believe you volunteer in the shop here at RNLI Blackpool. What brought you to the organisation?
Two things. First of all, I actually went on a holiday over towards the Farne Islands and realised when I was out there all about the history of Grace Darling, and it fascinated me, to be honest with you. So it sort of brought the RNLI to note. I've always lived in the countryside, so the RNLI was not really of much use to me till that point. Then we moved to Blackpool and we live on North Shore, and one night I was walking the dog and I just could see this person walking out into the sea. They were just going, you know, and you sort of like look at them and you think, oh, they're just putting their toes in the water. Then you look at them again and think, they've been a bit silly. Then you look at them a third time and think, there's a problem here. And I watched this person literally trying to walk out into the sea. Obviously, putting the call in, I think it had already gone in, though. And then I saw the Aran Islay coming round. The boats were there. They were there for that person. And it just made me realise that, you know, these guys go out and save lives. They do an absolutely fantastic job. So I was retiring and I just thought, I can do something.
I'm guessing it brings you an immense sense of satisfaction.
It's sort of a sense of satisfaction, but I've only been here a few months, but it's more a budding sense of commitment. I passionately want to see the RNI managing to do what it does so well, even better, if possible. And I'm dedicated, or, you know, becoming dedicated into helping them achieve that goal.
And it's important that people come into your shop, because fundraising is a very real part of the RNLI.
Yeah. I mean, we have people come in the shop and say, do you not receive any government funding? Do you not receive money?
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. No, they don't. Some people will turn around to us and say, it's a good thing you don't receive money, because if the government got involved, they'd probably muck it up. But at the same time, you've got volunteers protecting the shores of this country. That almost, in this day and age, sounds crazy, but it does work.
Unless you've had a need for the RNLI, then you really don't appreciate just the, I suppose, the commitment, service level of training, bravery, all those things that we talk about in people that do heroic acts. Just people don't realise what the RNLI do.
I didn't realise until such time as I watched them go out, and the weather was pretty stormy that night, and protect a life. That brought it home.
Grace Horsley Darling was born on the 24th of October 1815 in her grandfather's cottage in Bamborough, Northumberland. She was the seventh child of nine and the daughter of William and Thomasine Darling. William Darling was a lighthouse keeper, and Grace grew up on the Farne Islands, first at Browman's Island and later Longstone Rock. She spent her childhood studying, keeping the house clean and helping her father look after the lighthouse. Grace would often join her father when he put out to sea. On the 5th of September 1838, the SS Forfarshire set off from Hull to Dundee, carrying around 60 passengers and crew. During the night, the ship's boilers began to leak, and despite repair attempts by the crew, the leaks became worse. By 11 p.m. the following night, the boilers had failed completely, forcing Captain Humble to stop the engines. The Forfarshire began to drift, buffeted by the ferocious gale force winds that had begun to blow. The captain decided to turn back and seek shelter near Farne Islands, powered only by a makeshift sail. The storm was getting worse, and the pitch black night, tempestuous seas, and the downpour of rain made it increasingly difficult to navigate. Eventually, the captain saw a light, which he believed to be the lighthouse of Inner Farne, and headed towards it. In reality, he was drifting towards Longstone Lighthouse, unaware of the perilous rocks which surrounded it.
I'm Lorraine. I'm a volunteer crew member on the D-class and B-class at Blackpool Lifeboat Station.
Hello, Lorraine. I've just been speaking with your partner, Danny, who's the helm here at the lifeboat station at Blackpool. I suppose one of the reasons I'm asking everybody is why do you volunteer for the RNLI? Because it's not a paid position, and it's not an easy role to fulfil.
Yeah, I mean, I use the water myself, so I can understand the dangers that are out there. And having witnessed a job ongoing at one point a few summers ago, just thought if I was out there, I'd hope someone was going to come and look for me. And thought, well, if that's the case, maybe I should go and look for other people. So that just sort of inspired me to look into it a bit more. I've always known a few people that have done it at various stations, not this one. But I think you just have to have that moment where something happens in your mind that makes you think, no, I want to do that.
Just for people that don't know, how did you find the training? How long was it? What are the sort of things that you have to do to qualify as a boat person?
When you start at the station, you generally start as shore crew. You do that for maybe up to a year. That just make sure that you're happy with the position, that the station are happy with you, that you've got the commitment to come down to jobs all through the day and night. I mean, at this station, we do get a lot of nighttime jobs, middle of winter, 2 a.m, rough seas. It's not always the best conditions, so it doesn't always suit everybody. So you'll come down, do your shore crew part, because we need people to help launch the boats, particularly the D classes. It's very manual. And if it's a rough day, it's not that much fun to do. So yeah, we definitely need that support. And then once you've done that, gone through your shore crew training, you'll go onto a boat plan, and that's when you'll start doing the actual boat crew training, which does involve going down to Poole to do courses down there. And also we do exercise every week, so there's sort of ongoing training the whole time while you're out on the boats, or even in the classroom, depending on what sort of thing we're working on at the time.
I did ask Danny, it's an obvious question to ask people that do volunteer for the RNLI, is, you know, do you ever get anxious or scared when you're going out on a job?
You can do. I mean, you obviously you kind of get the anxiety, adrenaline of coming down to the job. You don't know what it's going to be. You know, you don't know who's going to be here when you get here. Are you going out? Are you not? Are you shore crew? Are you boat crew? You don't know that until you arrive. And those roles are sort of allocated as part of the briefing. The worst part really is the launch and recovery of the D classes in rough weather. And that is the hardest part. Once you're out there, yes, it can be rough. But you've got control of the boat at that point. When you're launching and recovering and it's a high tide and it's a bit windy, you're straight into deep water, you've got powerful waves and you're trying to maneuver a boat manually. For me, that's the hardest part. That's the anxious part, getting it off, getting it safe, getting in, and then getting back out again. We have alternative recovery sites for when it is bad weather, but you don't always know. Flat, calm day, it's nice and easy, but on a rough day, it can be, there's more to think about and there's more that can go wrong.
So has there been, in your service to the RNLI, one defining moment, I suppose, or one incident that sticks out in your mind?
There's probably a few for different reasons. It's always nice to hear that you've been involved in a life-save job. So there's a few of those that stick in my mind. I think for me, the most surprising part that I suppose you wouldn't expect when you first join up was that one of my first jobs, after having gone through all my shore crew training and like how to tie knots, where everything is on the boat for the SAR layout, and you start in training on towing and veering, was that I ended up out on the shore trying to talk a young lady out of the sea, obviously in a state of mental health crisis, struggling, didn't like men. I was the only woman on that crew. So it was then on me, and I just thought, I don't know what to do here. You know, this isn't what I was expecting, but you just have to try and find your way through it. That is something that's key at this station and is probably unusual. There's a few stations that probably are similar to ours. Most of your stations are out getting paddleboarders, kayakers, vessels. For us, we do get a lot of mental health incidents, which is why we get them all through the night, all through the day. And it's just different. It's just a different approach. It's a different mindset. You're not looking at your boat training as such. You're trying to think of, what can I say to this person that's going to help them in this moment?
Well, I think what you do is brilliant. I think what all you do is brilliant. And so I know the public, it's hard to believe, isn't it, that you're just a charity, but you really are an emergency service. So, so from all of us, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
At 4 a.m, the steamer crashed into the big hardcore rock a mile from Longstone Lighthouse. There was no time to call the passengers from their cabins and get them into the boats. Within 15 minutes, the ship had lurched onto the rocks once more, breaking the vessel in two. The front half of the ship became stuck on the rock. The back half was swept away by the sea and sank with more than 48 people on board. Grace saw the wreck from her bedroom window at 4:45 in the morning and ran to the telescope to search for survivors. It wasn't until 7 o'clock that it became light enough to see that there were people on the rock. In terrible weather, Grace Darling and her father, William, decided to row out and rescue the survivors. They rowed for almost a mile to reach them, fighting against the ferocious waves and powerful wind. They could see several people moving on big hardcore rock, and realised they would have to make two trips to rescue them all. William climbed onto the rocks to examine the injuries of the survivors, whilst Grace stayed in control of the boat rowing it backwards and forwards to avoid crashing into the reef. A female passenger who had lost two children, an injured man, and two crew members were chosen to make the first trip back to Longstone. They arrived safely, and William and the two crewmen returned for the remaining survivors, whilst Grace and her mother tended to the others. By 9 a.m, the rescue was complete, and nine survivors had been rescued from the ship.
My name's Danny, and I'm a helm at Blackpool Lifeboat Station.
OK, Danny, thank you very much. It's the RNLI open day today, beautiful weather. We were just talking a minute ago, you're a plasterer by trade.
Plasterer by trade, in the building trade, yeah. I've been nearly all my adult life, so, yeah, quite a few years.
I'm intrigued as to how you got involved with the RNLI.
It's a long story, probably too long for your podcast, but the short answer is I knew people on the station, so I joined like through that.
And what was your kind of sort of motivation for doing that?
The cliche, giving a little bit back to the community. I'm Blackpool born and bred, so just giving a little bit back. And if you can help somebody and save a life, that was my main goal, I'd be happy.
How long have you been with the RNLI now?
About 14 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
It seems a long time, but there's crew that's been here longer than I have. Yeah, I'm sort of in the middle.
So you're a helm at the moment. What does that involve?
So the helm, his job is to actually take the boat out with the crew, and you're there to ensure not only the safety of the crew, rescue of the casualty, but also to look after the actual asset as well. So it's a sort of a multi-skilled role, so you're there to be in charge and basically command of everything.
We were talking about this a few moments ago. You've got a wide variety of people that volunteer, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got lots of different people and lots of different jobs on the station. We have everything from accountants to undertakers, myself a plasterer. We have people who work for the local council. There's quite a different eclectic mix of people.
Now, I speak from personal experience as somebody that used to work in Blackpool as a police officer, and I've seen boats launch into the sea here, and I am beyond admiration for the bravery of yourselves that go into the seas when everybody else would think there's just no way of going in there. Do you ever, it's a silly question I suppose, but do you ever get scared or anxious when you're launching?
We don't tend to get, well, I, me personally don't tend to get scared because we have very good training. We know the equipment is the equipment that we need to actually do the job, and the RNLI are very good in backing you up. If you decide that it's too rough for you to go out, or the conditions aren't right, or, you know, if there's something not right and you decide as a helm, or if one of the launching authorities decides that it's not within the boat's capabilities, they won't put you into sea into any danger. So it's not like just some kind of gung-ho, you've got to go out there. There's, you know, there's a whole process you have to go through before the boat gets into the water.
And I suppose that gives you some reassurance that you're kind of working within your own capabilities and that of the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. You would never, ever put myself, the boat, the crew, anybody else in risk. It's just not worth it. The last thing you want to do is become a casualty yourself, because then you're putting somebody else in risk to come and get you out of danger.
I hope you enjoy today. It's a glorious day here, and thank you for your service. Like I say, you certainly have my admiration, I'm sure that of the public as well.
No, we only ask for donations to keep the station going. People class us as heroes, but we're not heroes. We're just everyday people that do an extraordinary job, I guess, as a volunteer.
Well, you've just described the definition of a hero, haven't you? It's an ordinary person doing extraordinary things.
There's nothing heroic in it. We're just normal people at the end of the day.
There'll be some of us that beg to differ. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Grace became renowned as a heroine and won the hearts of the nation. The courageous rescue was reported by national newspapers and her story spread internationally. She received several awards, including a gold medal of bravery from the Royal Humane Society and a silver medal for gallantry from the RNLI. Admirers sent letters, money and fine gifts to Grace, and even Queen Victoria sent £50. Artists travelled to Longstone to paint her portrait, which was sold to the curious public, and Grace became immortalised in plays, songs, poems and memorabilia. Tragically, Grace developed tuberculosis in 1842 and died in her father's arms on the 20th of October. Her funeral took place 4 days later at St Aidan's Church in Bamborough, which was attended by hundreds of people wishing to pay their last respects. Grace's memory is still honoured and preserved today, and the RNLI Grace Darling Museum in Bamburgh is dedicated to her story. In her rescue, Grace exhibited the same values our lifeboat crews live by today.
My name is Joseph. I'm a volunteer at the lifeboat. I've been here for 4 years. I work in the shop and I also do the viewing gallery upstairs. I teach people all about the capabilities of the boats, how fast they go, how many rescues we're up to, and teach the children water safety because the adults should know better. It's the children that need to learn.
Well, it's a point well made. And we'll talk about the capabilities of the boats in a moment, if you don't mind. But what brought you into volunteering for the RNLI?
I thought they needed help. So I came in and met Pat. I get on like an house on fire, really. If he needs cover, I come in and cover.
Do you find you get a lot of support from the public?
Yeah, we do, yeah. We do get a lot of people that are miffed about bringing immigrants over on the boat. We rescue all lives at sea. It doesn't matter where they're from, what colour, or anything like that. You know, we've been going for 200 years. They've only just started coming over. It isn't a thing that they are in the line, go and pick immigrants up.
Yeah, it's a very good point you make. Just tell me about some of the boats then that are here at Blackpool.
Yeah, well, the big boat is the Atlantic 85. It's the second fastest lifeboat in Britain. The first fastest is the E-Class, which is on the Thames. That does 45 miles an hour. The Atlantic does 40. It carries with it 3 red players and 6 white players. The red players are if the boat's in trouble. The white players, if they go looking for a casualty at night and it's pitch black out there, they'll set up a white flare. That will illuminate a large area, making it easier to find the casualty. They will then get the casualty out of the water onto the boat, wrap them up to get them warm and put a life jacket on them. They'll do medical checks on the boat and radio all the information back here to us, where we will have ambulances and paramedics waiting. The smaller boats, they're the D-class. They do up to 29 miles an hour. They have a crew of 3 and can rescue 5 people. They're flat bottom boats, so they're very good for shallow water rescues, and they're pretty good in rough sea. With them being small, they're very manoeuvrable. So
how many crew does the Atlantic?
The Atlantic has a crew of 4 and can rescue up to 20 people.
Wow, so it's a big boat then.
Yeah.
Well, Joseph, I wish you well and thank you for volunteering.
All right, mate, thank you.
So I'm delighted to be joined by Steve Fitzgerald. Steve, we have something in common, don't we? We're both former police officers within Lancs Police. But you have an affinity with the sea here, don't you, for all sorts of reasons?
Yeah, obviously, when I was working in Blackpool, it was always a coastal response situation. Way back when, 5th of January 1983, I was one of the responding officers to the drownings, where we sadly lost 3 colleagues. So I've always had an attachment and a respect for the water and also everything that goes on with regards to rescue, search and rescue, that kind of thing.
I think you started off as a public relations manager for RNLI now, but you're doing something different now, I believe.
I finished my police career in 2023. I'd finished actually in the Cayman Islands, where I was involved with their helicopters and the Coast Guard search and rescue there. And I came back here 2023. Just as I was coming back, they advertised for the lifeboat press officer for Blackpool RNLI. And when I looked at what they wanted, I thought, I could do that. Obviously, I'm not going to be on the operational side, but I thought, I can do that. I can help them out. I'd undergone media training and been involved in the media, both at Lancashire and in the Cayman Islands. So I applied and was successful in getting it. Over the year, I was trained as a media officer, which surprised me, the level of training the RNLI give their press officers, but it balances out with everything that they do for their training for every role. They don't just turn up and let you do it. They make sure that you're qualified. In the meantime, Blackpool's chair of the Lifeboat Management Committee got to the stage where he decided he wanted to step back for a number of reasons. So they advertised for a chair for the management group. I applied for that and I got that one as well, so I'm double hatting at the moment. My main role is the lifeboat press officer, but then overseeing it is the chair of the lifeboat management group.
This year is the anniversary of the RNLI. It's still hard to believe that it's a charity and not a funded service. We're sat outside at the moment opposite the lifeboat station at Blackpool. Can you tell us a little bit about the building?
The building was completed in 1998 to replace the offshore lifeboat house that they had at Central Pier. That had become an inshore, but it wasn't fit for purpose. So this one was built, completed. They included a shop and visitor centre in it, which is... it's one of the busiest in the country in terms of footfall and revenue. And it's brilliant that people can actually go in and look at the lifeboats without having to physically touch the lifeboats. We still keep the operational areas sterile from members of the public. We house two D-class lifeboats inshore and the Atlantic 85, which is an inshore boat. Although it's got a longer range and can go out in more severe weather than the D-class. So with three inshore boats, it's one of only two RNLI stations that actually has three lifeboats in it. And that's because of how busy this station is. At times we can have two or three lifeboats launched.
I was going to ask you actually, how in the rankings of lifeboat stations across the UK, how busy is Blackpool?
It's always up in the top 10, if not the top 5, of deployments during the year. Obviously, a lot of our deployments come in the evening and night time. Blackpool being the Blackpool type of area it is, and some of the people it attracts have a fondness for wanting to go into the water in the middle of the night. It is an issue. It's related to the mental health crisis that's going on everywhere else. And it's something generally that we don't judge on. We're a non-judgmental voluntary service, rescue service. Everybody's life is there to be saved at sea. But we have got involved this year with the Blackpool Council and the mental health crisis teams to see if there was anything we can add to their very good work that's going on in that area.
Well, you've got the open day today. Just tell us about some of the things that's going to be happening, some of the events that are on.
Right, the open day we have every year. We actually obviously had the delay from last bank holiday weekend to today, and it's probably worked out very well in our favour because it's illumination switch on weekend. And as you can see, it's very, very busy. We've got at 12:30 the sandcastle competition starting. Fortunately, the tide will have turned and be on the way out by that time. That always helps when you plan a sandcastle competition. We've got entertainment on the stage all throughout the afternoon at different stages, some vocalists, magic acts, that kind of thing. We've also got the our community partners, the Beach Patrol, police, ambulance service are dropping in and out when they can. Failed to mention the Coast Guard, who are the ones that deploy us most of the time. We've got stalls that are selling teas, coffees, memorabilia, everything you can think of. We've also got some private stalls, and we've, for this year, got an ice cream van.
You got a nice barbecue going, because I can smell it.
And the barbecue, the crew are running the barbecue. It's one of the things they pride themselves with, and that'll be going all day. We've also got a licensed bar at the barbecue, which is unusual for an event like this, but if you're going to buy your beer anywhere today, you can always come down here and get it.
A lot of things going on today. What does the future hold for the RNLI, specifically Blackpool, I suppose?
It's constant involvement. It's the RNLI's 200th, but it's the Blackpool's 160th year of operation. One of the things that's key is volunteers. When you run a service on volunteers, your reliance on people giving up their work day, just turning up at the drop of a hat. We're relying on people staffing the shop as volunteers or working a rota. The pressures that builds on you. We're advertising for lifeboat crew at the moment. We also have a whole background behind them. That's the shore crews, the launch authorities, the drivers. And these are always things that any one of these little cogs is missing. You can't launch the lifeboat. So for the three lifeboats, to get them on the water, we're looking at about 15 people needing to turn out, and that's the minimum, and we've probably got about 25 at the moment. So it's looking to the future. Getting across the Saving Lives at Sea water safety messages is key to everything that we do, because if we ended up with no call outs, then we probably succeeded in our role of making sure that nobody needed us. I can't see that ever being the case. We've always got to be prepared to provide that 24-hour, 7 days a week service and recruit the right people that will be able to commit to the future and the longevity. Training a lifeboat crew member takes about 9 months. So it's a significant input that they have to do and the RNLI have to do to actually get them out onto the sea.
If people want to donate to the RNLI or if they're thinking about volunteering, how would they do that?
RNLI.org is the website. You can donate directly on the website. You can donate via the Blackpool RNLI Facebook page. If you want to volunteer, if you want to come down and speak to anybody down here, we're always willing to speak to anybody. But there's also a volunteer section on the website. If you go on it, it'll tell you what the posts are available locally. It's obviously on the Fylde Coast, it's not just us, it's Fleetwood and Lythamston Tans. We're all regularly recruiting crew and the backfill for support staff. So I would say go onto the rnli.org website and look at the volunteers. Otherwise, come down and speak to us.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks for the work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Dave.
Perhaps we should close this podcast with the words of William Wordsworth, who wrote a poem about Grace Darling. Together they put forth father and child. Each grasps an oar, and struggling on they go, rivals in effort and alike intent. Here to elude and there surmount, they watch the billowing lengthening, mutually crossed and shattered and regathering their might, as if the tumult by the Almighty's will were in the conscious sea roused and prolonged. That woman's fortitude, so tried, so proved, may brighten more and more.